This episode is brought to you by NordVPN. Listen up, nerds. No. Good evening, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border and coast to coast and all the ships at sea.
What?
Hello, friends. Do you have a computer? Of course you do, because it's not 1987. Hell, you're listening to this on some kind of computer right now. But do you have a VPN?
Oh,
what's a VPN, you ask? Well, my friend, a VPN is a virtual private network and it offers two key benefits. Enhanced privacy and security online. But VPNs do a lot more than that. VPNs shield your IP address, change your browsing location, and make online life easier. It's all about safety and security, my friends. But like everything else in life, it's also about watching TV. Don't let your paid subscriptions go to waste. I use NordVPN to access my home content while I'm traveling. Wink, wink. Plus, secure your connection on public Wi-Fi in airports, hotels, cafes, anywhere you go when you're traveling. There's over 6,300 servers in 111 countries, and you can find a nearby server for the best VPN speeds. NordVPN is easy to use. Connect with one click or enable auto-connect for zero-click protection. And it's got amazing speed. NordVPN is one of the fastest VPNs out there. And with just one NordVPN account, you can use it on 6 devices. It supports every major platform, Windows, Android, iOS, macOS, Linux, even Android TV. I think those are all real. Don't miss out on all the awesome benefits for using a VPN. Go to nordvpn.com/ifanboy today for a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee. The link's in the show notes. Once again, that's nordvpn.com/ifanboy.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often, I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things, and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it, work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it, you know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/ifanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, HELP.com/ifanboy.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast. It's episode 536. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Hello.
And Josh Flanagan.
Hold on.
Yeah. Hello.
Always got a bit.
We've come a long way on this show, haven't we?
I don't know that Ron and I have. I feel like...
Yeah, yes.
Someone's catching up.
So we're having drinks. It was a hard week. We'll get to that later. We are a fanboy. We like comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics. One of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book and other books we read, other fun stuff. We do some listener mail. We have a good time. And here's your spoiler warning. It's a review show, so there'll probably be some spoilers. So exercise some caution in listening. And now, Josh and his bourbon, which was, I think, a band in the 70s.
Had the Josh and his bourbon?
Yeah.
Yeah. A Minnesota group, I think.
Yeah. You had to pick.
I did. My pick of the week this week was, perhaps to my own surprise, Superman American Alien number 7.
Not just your surprise, everybody's, I think.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I didn't have a standout this week, and so I had to get down to the math. You know, like, what is it that made me happy? And what you have here is I've really enjoyed this miniseries. For one thing, Max Landis, he can write a comic book script. Mm-hmm. For a guy who's sort of not a comic book writer, you know, is his main thing. Like, he does good comic book scripts, especially these sort of one-shot kind of deals. The other side of it was art from Jock.
I feel like I haven't seen jock comic book art in a little while. And I really like him doing Superman, even if it's the stupidest Superman suit possible.
Yes. Great variant cover.
Yeah, yeah.
Really great variant cover.
And then you mix that with the fact that, and this may be also some of the surprise, this was a Lobo story.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the let's talk about the suit for a second, which
yeah
looked like he was wearing hockey pads, which mm-hmm. we all know Batman would not agree with. And it looked like he painted the S on so it drips a little bit, which is a little funny, but...
Well, I mean, it looked ridiculous, but I think it just, like it's the evolution of Superman through the series, right? Yeah, so yeah. I mean, so where he's at this point in his development in the Landisverse, or whatever this is, I kind of like that it looks kind of goofy because he's trying, you know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have the support or whatever that, you know, yeah, so I don't know. It looks ridiculous, but I think it's on purpose, you know?
Yeah, it's
an interesting choice. This, at the same time, I said, oh, that's old Lobo, which at this point I even like compared to, you know, new.
Well, yes.
That's where we're at with DC. We're like, well, at least they've got this.
Historical listeners to the show will know I hate very few characters. Lobo mm-hmm. is one of them. However,
yep,
he did work in this story for two reasons. One, there's very few characters that Superman can go all out on.
Or who feel like a threat at all.
Right, and Lobo's one of them because he's sort of like, he's a Wolverine takeoff and he can heal, so Superman could punch him through his head and he'd basically still be alive. And the other one is, it's sort of... It represents the complete diametric philosophical difference between Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And that he has all this strength and power and he uses it for his own personal monetary gain and doesn't care about people, and where Superman is the exact opposite. So in that sense, as the climax of the story, having Lobo be the adversary worked for me. Despite the fact that when I showed up, I was like, oh, please let him go away within two pages. And when I realized he didn't, it was all right.
Yeah, it worked out because really you've got this young Superman who is throughout this whole thing trying to figure out who he is and what he is. And he gets there and it really is like a rock in a heart. Like, what's he going to do? This guy's not scared of him. He's not going away. He has no empathy for any of the people around him. Like, what does Superman do? And I mean, this is really almost the answer to that thing in the movie, the first Snyder movie that, you know, a lot of people didn't like. You know, where he had to use extreme force. This is another way to do that. Now, the out for that is that, you said, this character is going to heal himself, but, you know, he throws him into space. You know, but the end, he's hurt. You know, he's in a hospital bed, which...
Superman.
Yeah, which causes a whole lot of other questions, by the way.
Yeah.
That, like, did doctors...
How'd they get the IV in him?
Yeah, right. And they did. He's got the stuff going on. So,
the rules in this... This we're gonna call it the Landisverse, I guess. I guess that's a thing now.
Did I just name that? I think I did.
No,
sorry. So I like the Landisverse. I'll go on record and say that I like it.
The rules are murky on how exactly his powers are because we've seen him do different things than normal.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I did like him beating Lobo with a parking meter and having the quarters flying everywhere.
I was just looking at that. I mean, and that's the other thing. What you've got here is Jock doing pages and pages of a fist fight, which, you know, was really fun. It was really cool to look at that storytelling and just that really beautiful looseness that he has, you know, with his camera angles and it was lettered really great. All the sound effects during the fight, the whoop 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 when he's like,
it's goddamn Workman.
Yeah, I know it should be. There's right after he throws him up into space, there's like a panel of a helicopter getting thrown off and there's like part of a whoosh is in the panel going vertically. It's cut off on either side. And then you just quickly cut to Luther watching it happen.
I did like the little, the thing about this is that I was impressed at the depth and the moments, you know, and like, so the fact that, you know, like, you know, Superman and Lobo are having a conversation floating in the air and, you know, and all, you know, a building is just falling down and news is kind of swarming and the Jimmy's in a helicopter and Perry's yelling, get closer so we can hear what they're saying. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they pick up the audio just as Superman gets a little sassy.
Yeah.
And I like that they, you know, and they stay true to the, you know, family nature of DC and just the little Luther going, heh. You know, like laughing at Superman losing it. You know, like it was a nice subtle touch in that moment. I thought so.
It's a really well done issue. You know, yeah. And I am, at this point, maybe more than ever, I'm just hungry for Superman stories that make me happy. And this is like, oh, look, they're goddamn well possible. Like, you can do them.
The only negative I have to say about this, and it wasn't really the book itself, it's that, you know, Ron said earlier that this is about the evolution to Superman. And I thought this really needed one more issue.
Is this the last issue?
Yeah.
Oh, does need one more issue.
7 of 7, and it says the end at the end. It's
This
needs one more.
Yeah.
I don't feel like we have come to Superman at the end here.
I agree.
So yeah, that was the only negative I had for it.
Yeah, there needs to be a proper costume, proper moment, confidence. Yeah. You know, I totally didn't. I saw it said end at the end of it. I just thought it was the end of the issue. I know it was the end of the whole thing. Yeah.
So
that's unfortunate. Oh, that's a bummer. Well, wait. If you're gonna go out, go out with Jock.
Right.
That's what I always say.
It is what you always say. You're always saying it. It's weird.
Yeah, I'm always saying that. If you can go out with Jock.
Out of context too.
He's a lot of fun to hang out with. He is. I mean, the funny thing is, he is. He's a really nice guy.
I have no doubt. And he backs it up with good work.
You know, this was 3 or 4 of these 7 issues were pick of the week. This was a surprisingly good miniseries.
Also, like, it really took advantage of the issue format. I mean, I don't know that this read really well the way that it was released in issues, you know, month by month, as opposed to, you know, being one big story that you were like, well, what happened in the last one? Didn't matter. Like,
because it was so different. Every issue was its own story. There was a really, you know, obviously light thread in the background of the development of Clark Kent and Superman, but really it was it was 7 moments in Clark's life told by a different artist with Max Landis' script. And so in that sense, it doesn't need to be read together. We haven't really seen Jock do big action. The last thing we saw was the Scott Snyder book, whose name is escaping me.
Witches.
Which wasn't super huge in action, more on atmosphere. This was Jock getting to go all out.
And yeah,
his style is so chaotic that, you know, this is a chaotic fight, so it works really well.
And normally, like, he's getting more of a murky color, and these Lee Lowridge colors, like, you really get the primary red and blue of Superman, which I think is something that people are being very aware of at this point. Like, don't make him gray. And so it worked. It worked very well. It was great to look at. It was beautiful. Fun issue.
Yeah. Really, this was great. I really enjoyed this quite a bit. What is going on with these DC Universe Rebirth ads in the back of these books?
The guy
in the bus stop staring at Batman, staring at him.
Oh, that's the... I saw like a headline like on social media like they're trying to appeal to hipsters, and I thought that was a joke. So then I also think that this is like... This looks like a joke ad.
Right, which it's not.
It's not, which is funny because it's like, so there's not bus ads, but there's bus ads in the ad. That's weird. I don't get it. So
he's got Reebok running shoes on. Like, is that a hipster thing?
Yeah.
Is that hair? Is that what? I don't know. I don't know what I'm looking at. Is that supposed to be who the audience they want to reach? That guy?
I thought it was the exact opposite. Should be like a 45-year-old guy.
It should be. Yeah,
it was just
right.
Weird. I saw it and I was like, "What? What is this?"
It looks like a joke ad. Like if somebody wrote a fake headline that was DC trying to appeal to hipsters, like, and this would be their like funny example.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like satire.
Yes.
I can't stop looking at it though.
and we're talking about it, so that's right.
I'm trying to decode everything about it.
Yep.
Like it doesn't. Those shoes are brand new.
Well. Hipsters don't actually work out in running, you know, running gear.
Yeah.
They don't need to. They weigh 90 pounds. So I have to say that after 4 issues, Power Man and Iron Fist is like one of my top 5 books, I think.
Strong.
Finish to the story.
Strong finish.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun from every angle.
And they didn't, like at the end, he's like, yes, we're getting back together. So we don't have to string that part out for a while. Like he can be reluctant in it, but we're not going to keep doing that.
Yeah, well, they strung it along just exactly the right length of it.
At one point I said, I don't know if I'm getting tired of this sort of like the Danny as the little dog that jumps around the big bulldog from the Chuck Jones cartoons. Like that's mm-hmm. what he's getting to. But they skirted that line, I think.
Well, they skirt that line a lot. Like I had a similar thought, not with that aspect, but with the Luke not cursing aspect, you know, like say fiddle faddle one more time, you know? I chuckled. So, I mean, it's working. It's a delicate line to balance. But yeah, this has been great. This issue was a great a solid conclusion, and you know, it's got me in. And the question is whether or not. I mean, I just hope the art doesn't change on the next issue because I love Sanford Green. I think he's doing great.
He's a huge part of it. There's a lot of great things he does. We talked about the whole time how he's done really great facial expressions, really funny acting choices,
fun layouts too.
Like, in the beginning, there's that flashback to their, you know, their adversary, their old secretary, and we see three images of the good times in her life, and then three mirror images, you know, of the bad times, how they relate. And I thought that was really great, you know, contrasting panel work there. And then the fastball special, which I know...
Fistball.
The fistball special, I know we, you know, sometimes roll our eyes when they go to the well too much with these things, but I thought this time...
That worked. That was effective. That worked, yeah.
Wolverine taught me this. Yoink!
One of the things I also liked is that I like how the alliances and sort of face-offs were shifting a little. Like, all right, we're gonna be cool with Tombstone right now. Or when Black Mariah was like, all right, let's realign who we're upset with. She didn't. Like, it was realistic in that sense. You know, like it wasn't just we hate you, so we're gonna fight the whole time. It sort of shifted around, which I thought isn't always done that often, even though it seems like an obvious choice a lot of the time.
Right. Did anyone else hear Luis Guzman's voice whenever they talk to that dude?
No, but now I do.
I can see it.
I'm going to own this whole place.
I was hearing it, and I was like, if they ever do this, he needs to be this character. I feel like that's who they modeled him on, because the speech patterns are kind of like that. And I think Sanford Green kind of drew him like that in the beginning. But what was his name? It was funny.
Luis Guzman?
No, the character. The character's name.
Oh, I don't know. The magic guy. I don't know. Yeah.
They didn't say his name.
Yeah, they did. Senor Magico.
I thought that was a fake. I thought that was like a fake nickname.
No, they consulted with Senor Magico.
That's not a fake nickname?
No. Well, they're all fake nicknames.
You know, like if I called, like, that's I looked over name. At that guy over there, he's like, you know, the guy with the boots, Captain Boots over there.
Oh, speaking of the nickname, that's what, what's her name? The Mariah woman with Iron Fist. There was that one page where she rolled out like six wrong, like, okay, Kung Fu Panda, come on, let's, you know, like it was just this rattling of, yeah, that was, you know, that was another one where it was just the right amount.
Hong Kong Fooey.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, it, for a moment I groaned, and then the next one had made me laugh. So,
well, that's how you do it. You either stop early or you keep fucking going.
Yeah, yeah, you just keep going, yeah. Yeah, Hong Kong Fooey. Yeah, that was, it was very,
I probably would have made this my pick of the week. Probably, I think so.
Would have been a fine case for it.
Yeah, I just love this book. Is, you know, I wasn't necessarily going to read it when it first came out because Power Man, Iron Fist, I like them, but I just don't automatically jump when they have a book out, which I guess hasn't happened in forever anyway. So I guess that argument is moot. But when I did, it was great, man. I think I've loved every issue more.
Didn't know who the creators were. You know, it was all new. It was good times.
Kung Fu Grip, Hong Kong Fooey, Kung Fu Hustle, all on one page. All on one page.
Yeah. I'm tired of talking about Astro City.
You put it on the list.
I know. I would never get tired of talking about Astro City.
Well, no, I'm just like,
now, especially now in this Renaissance golden period of it.
I know, and the thing is though, I love Jack in the Box. He was like my favorite of all the sort of original group of Astro City heroes. And I got to this, and I was like, oh, we're gonna have to talk about this again because it's still that good. And there's sort of an ongoing legacy that he has installed in this when he built his own version of, you know, the Marvel or DC universe. And they did a great Jack in the Box story about, you know, this character who inherited from his father and then had to stop because he was a dad, and the guy who took that over, Roscoe. And then this is like, well, what happens to that kid? Because it actually is that much later that the kid has grown up now.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's great. And again, it's continuing the you know, like, it's got to be, in order to make a story featuring the character that looks like this good, it's got to be really good, and it's always really good. There's never been a bad Jack in the Box story, and the character looks ridiculous, and especially when the guy takes the mask off, and it looks even more ridiculous, and like when it's half on and that sort of thing.
I think that's why I like it so much, because it shouldn't work, and it really is compelling. So you start to in your head build how does that work physically, how does that look, and it's like, wow, that's really cool that you can make that. You're absolutely right.
For me, the big story for this is Ron Randall doing his best Brent Anderson style.
And when you're saying best Brent Anderson, you're not kidding.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was I got to the end of it. I'm like, oh, that wasn't Brent Anderson?
Same thing. I did the same thing.
It's about halfway through. For some reason, the art changed a little bit halfway through. He didn't have an inker, so I don't know why, but...
It was a little cleaner.
It got cleaner, and I don't know what happened. But you're right. The first couple of pages, I didn't know it wasn't Brent Anderson.
Yeah.
It does kind of worry me that we're getting a lot of fill-ins.
Yeah, I know. Well, I mean, yeah.
Yeah, that.
To back up that, I'm sorry, Josh, at least if they're fill-ins, I mean, Ron Randall is a great artist in his own right, but making an effort to keep the visual continuity of a Brent Anderson book, you know, that style, I think is really key. And there have been some other fill-ins that haven't done that as well. And I think this is this was a home run, you know?
He was super solid. I was like, another fill-in. That's worrisome. Just because it's, you know, say what you will about Brent Anderson, he... You know, like Alan Davis draws everybody like they lived 30 years ago, but...
I love it. I don't care. I love it.
His visual language is the language of Astro City. And, yes. As long as he's not permanently gone, I'll be all right.
Yep.
And I don't know what's going to happen with this story. That's the other thing. I got to the end and I thought, I don't...
Well, did you see the preview in the letters page? It's like, and now for the other side of the story, which is, I thought, interesting. So I can't wait. I love it. I love it. It's amazing. It's magic every time it comes out.
Like, we're 35 issues into this thing.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's almost like Kurt Busiek has had this in him the whole time, and he's finally hit this stride where he's able. I feel like he's gone further with this volume than any of the others.
Is this a longer single run? I think it is.
Which
is crazy. We wrote it off. We could be honest. We wrote it off after those.
We did.
After those dark age.
Well, yeah. But he went through a thing, and like, you know, he did it. I don't know for him whether he thought it worked or not, but then he's like, all right, let's go back to the thing that it was, and it is just so full of joy and verve, and he's the one guy who went back to the well, and I feel like we keep saying it, but it's still amazing, it's still working.
Joie de vivre.
Spider-Woman number 7. I've been really digging this. It was pick of the week at one point. I brought up the last one. This was art by Joel Jones
Joel Jones, who's fantastic.
She's really fantastic.
Yeah.
What was interesting about this is that basically it is part of a crossover that I'm not reading with Spider-Gwen, who I have never read before. Yeah. And I almost missed it because I still think I don't look for it when I go to sort of get comics. But I'm really glad I didn't. Like, she comes home from this thing, and her babysitter is sitting there with some other guy who looks just like her, who said it's her twin brother. And he's from an alternate universe.
Before we talk about that, was the babysitter Irish?
It's the guy who was in the last Spider-Woman series in the big.
Is he Irish? Because he said boyo at one point. And I was like, and then that made me miss Banshee.
I don't know. I don't know if he is Roger. Right. He's gotten a lot more attractive over the course of these series, though, because he was like dumpy looking, and because he had a big beaver costume.
Well, I think a part of that. I mean, I'll give that to Joelle Jones, because I'm fairly certain Joelle Jones is incapable of drawing not pretty people.
Yeah. Well, this is a good book for that then.
Yeah. Anyway, but sorry.
And so basically, it's like there's a big fight that happens in the apartment, and the cover sort of hints at this, that they're gonna have a fight in the apartment while the baby's sleeping, which I find inherently funny and dramatic. But basically, I thought what was interesting about it was that this is almost sort of what I said about Iron Man and Power Fist, is that she just decides, I don't really like what you're doing, but you're from an alternate dimension, and I can't worry about this right now.
I don't know who Iron Man and Power Fist are, but I want to read that book.
Iron Man and Power Fist. Did I say that?
Yeah.
That's Parenthood brain. That's what happens
to
you.
Okay. It was funny.
So yeah, and it's just like there's a bunch of conflicts that happen based on her decision to sort of, I'm not going to get involved in this thing. And it's a big complicated thing, but even though it was in the middle of a crossover that I didn't read, I don't know that I'll even keep reading it, like, I still enjoyed the issue. She's a great character, and I think that what they did with her hair is interesting to sort of make her stand out from some of the other characters. And, you know, Dennis Hopeless, I keep waiting for him to get his, like, big breakthrough. Like, why don't you give him one of the real big, I guess he's on an X-Men book now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's on the X-Men book that we like.
Yeah.
Yeah. He needs to take over the Avengers is what he needs to do. Mm. He's seen enough now.
Okay.
Wow.
There it is. That's what I'm saying. Wow. He can do it.
Josh's House of Ideas promotes quickly.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? He's been top tier since was it Young Avengers? Is that what it was? No, the Hunger Games book.
Yeah. I forgot what that was. Yeah.
Avengers Arena.
Avengers Kill 'Em All. Yeah.
But seriously, like, you know, right then you saw he's got it. He's still doing these little books. And maybe that's what it is personal. It might not work on Avengers scale or something like that, but it also might be fun. Yeah. Anyway, he's got skills. That's what I'm getting at. It's a good book. We should be reading it.
I'm not even going to ask Josh, Ron, did you read Civil War 2?
I did.
Number zero?
I did.
I will read
anything Olivier Coppel
wrote. Well, that's part of the big reason why I read it was Olivier Coppel drew it. But this is Civil War 2, Back to the Well for the movie, which it seems odd that...
I wish that was the
we all know it. So
Civil War 2, Back to the Well.
The movie. Back to the Well, for the movie.
It seems odd though that, you know, they are doing this because there's a Captain America Civil War movie out, but the
Cap has nothing to do with this.
But this is also issue zero. It's not even issue one hasn't even come out and the movie's already been out for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, by the time issue one comes out, you know, it's a media landscape that moves quickly. I just feel like issue one should have come out a month ago.
Agreed.
This is the kickoff of this event, which written by Brian Michael Bendis, and this issue at least is drawn by Olivier Coipel, because it's Dave Marquez drawing the book, right?
Correct. Because Olivier Coipel can't do a monthly, unfortunately.
But this issue is beautiful.
Yep.
It sets up She-Hulk, War Machine, and Captain Marvel as the... at least in this issue, are the primary characters and...
Players.
So the question is... What's gonna start this civil war?
Well, since Josh didn't read it, we'll give Josh one guess.
I was flipping through it. I was just flipping through it, and I saw it, and I was like, "Yeah, of course."
It's basically the Winter Soldier storyline. It's
right.
It's stopping crime before it happens.
Yep.
And I guess that's...
Oh, I thought it was... I'm sorry, I was wrong. I thought it was... Because I turned to a page, and it's like everyone's looking up at a cloud, and they're going...
That was the thing. This is the flashpoint. The flashpoint of the issue was a Terrigen mist hits Ohio, and an Inhuman emerges and then blows up the city.
Right.
And, you know, and so that's the trigger moment, and it's a fucking Inhuman again.
Which was funny because it was an X-Men last time, right?
It was Nitro and Speedball.
Yep.
Oh right, Speedball.
Young New Mutants.
It's technically New Warriors.
Okay. Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure Speedball is a mutant though. Let me check that. But he wasn't New Warriors.
The point is, before that happens, the whole philosophical debate is, well, maybe we should start stopping people doing bad things before they do them, which is, you know, the Captain America Winter Soldier plot line. So it'll be somewhat familiar to people who watch the movies. I did enjoy the scene with Rhodey and not Barack Obama.
Oh, hang on. I'm sorry. Just to interrupt. He is not a mutant.
Oh.
Speedball. Robbie Baldwin. His origin created by Roger Stern and Steve Ditko in Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 22 in September 1988.
What if we name a character after a combination of cocaine and heroin? That'll work, right?
Well, I think what's more interesting is that in 1988, Steve Ditko was drawing Amazing Spider-Man Annual number 22, and
no one talks about that.
No one talks about that. Yeah, everyone's like, you know, Steve Ditko walked away in the 60s or whatever. No, he didn't at all.
That's true.
But according to this, his origin was Robbie was accidentally exposed to extra-dimensional energy during an experiment at a lab where he worked.
Well, that happens. That will happen.
Yeah.
It's an OSHA issue, though. You have to get paperwork quickly.
Yeah. I'm now more interested in all the work of Steve Ditko of the 80s. Anyway,
I'm going to bring that up. That's relevant to later.
I like the discussion with Rhodey and the president about how, look, eventually one of you is going to run for president. So I'd like to groom, you know, the most qualified one in you now, because, you know, can't have Tony Stark. Trump jab. Like, there can't be, you know, Tony Stark buying his way into the White House.
That's a neat thing that they can do. I'm interested in that.
He's like, I want to make you Secretary of Defense, because, first of all, you're qualified, but second of all, eventually one of you is going to run for president, and I'd rather it be you.
That was a nice little touch.
Of course. He's not going to make
it. Just as cool. Yeah, when they make, I mean, they should, I mean, but that's my dream of... The West Wing or the Merrill office in the Marvel Universe. That's the series I've always wanted to do.
You want to do Jim Rhodes, U.S. president?
I mean, whoever. He seems to be he's a good person for it, but there's all sorts of stories you can tell. Like, I'm all ready for that story now. I'm like, that's rad. Better than Captain America was president in the Ultimates, which was silly.
So, Yeah, that was so funny. according to the ads I'm seeing on the internet, it looks as if She-Hulk, War Machine, and Captain Marvel are all on the same side, and the other side is Iron Man, Falcon, Cap, and Deadpool. So
Jesus Christ,
and Star-Lord
movies.
Yeah.
Wow, you're right, Star-Lord. It's all the movie characters.
Yep. It's all the movie characters.
I'm gonna guess they win.
Yeah. But what struck me about this issue is the ever-changing landscape of the post-Secret War Marvel universe, where apparently dead characters have come back to life with no explanation. And I'm wondering how long we're going to get that as an excuse to people just bring back people who they want. This time it was in the form of Doc Samson, who was ceremoniously dead and buried by the Hulk. Like, dead, dead, gone, dead, buried. And, oh, here he is meeting with Captain Marvel.
I'm actually – we disagree on that point. I like when they just show up again because it's the way that they – anything else is more convoluted.
I agree with that. I don't think I agree with you in that, like, who cares and they're just gonna do it. But I'm just saying, like, that whether MacGuffin is the right word or whatever, like, they just have a license to do whatever they want now, and I'm curious how long that's gonna last.
Well, it used to be the joke that they always come back, and now I'm realizing, oh, that wasn't actually true, but now it's true.
Now it's true, yes.
Yeah. So now
they didn't die quite as often, but when they did die, they did come back. They've always come back, but they just didn't die as often because Marvel didn't have an edict to kill somebody every quarter.
But there was a couple of people who sort of stayed dead, so you thought, well, maybe that's a thing.
There was
so
only when it happened, there was only two.
It mattered. Yeah.
There was only then for a while three that was they were like the everyone else can come back, these three don't, and then they all came
back.
The
Trinity. Yeah.
All right, so here's my question about Marvel in general right now. Does anyone ever talk about this Terrigen thing with any what's going to happen?
Passion?
You mean readers?
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard zero discussion. I mean, you remember when Blackest Night was a thing? Like, people were talking about it, and when Civil War was a thing, and even when the Siege was a thing, and this Terrigen Cloud thing that has been the cornerstone of Marvel for a year maybe.
Well, no, when I saw it in this issue, I was like, is this still happening? Like,
yeah,
is there still a cloud just roaming the earth, like Cain?
Nice.
But the real thing is, no one's talking about this. And as I was reading this, I thought, wow, remember the time when people got super excited for events and how much fun it was to read comics when that was happening? And it's just, I don't know what happened, but...
Secret Wars? People were going nuts? What was the one with the Krulls?
Secret
Invasion.
Secret Invasion. Like, that was
I would like to see the crossover with Krull.
I would, too. I almost said krill, which are little shrimp creatures.
Which would be even more interesting as well, too. So, yeah.
It would be as compelling as the Terrigen Cloud.
Oh, God. Stop shoving. The shoving of Inhumans down our face, and they blew it with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's not happening on the movies. Like, it's just, they just got to stop. It's got to stop.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. So that's Civil War. I mean, granted, this is the zero issue, but a lot of important things happen in it, so I feel like people should be talking about it if it's going to be a big event.
Well,
they didn't, so there you go. Quick note to talk about ifanboy.com/support. That's how you can help support this show. There's a couple of things you can do there. One, you can click on our Amazon link, and there you can do all your Amazon shopping, and we get a little piece of that sale, and nothing comes out of your pocket, and it helps keep the lights on, and we appreciate that very much. Everyone who does that, they do it all throughout the year, and we thank them. Also, become an iFanboy member there. $3 a month or $30 a year. You can help us out directly, become an iFanboy member, and we appreciate those of you the most, especially those who have been doing it for years, and we really can't thank you enough. And finally, you can just make a random donation there, too, if you feel like you don't want to become a recurring member, but you want to just help us out once or twice, and we really do appreciate that people do that all the time, and it does help pay for the bills, and it does help keep us upgraded in equipment, and it does help keep us going. So we really do thank everyone. It goes to iFanboy.com/support.
Invincible number 128. We still got Corey Walker on this art, and Nathan Fairbairn on colors, and boy, does it look really good. It's amazing how Corey Walker can still come in here after, for those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, 128 issues ago, Corey Walker drew this book, Invincible, before Ryan Ottley took over, and now Ottley's taking a little sabbatical on the book, and Corey Walker's doing an art, and it's great. Like, I don't even notice it. Not that it's good, it just fits and it works.
I always liked Corey Walker's art on it.
Yeah, no, I did too, and I like both of them, and I almost don't have a preference. It's a nice switch, and like I said, the colors are really the Fairbairn colors really just make it look top notch. But other than that, 128 issues in, I'm still really enjoying this book. And basically, Mark moved to, I forget the name of the planet, this other planet, and him, he's going to be there with his wife. And then he got stuck in a time loop and was gone for 5 years, their time, but only a little while his time, and everything changed. And, you know, this world they're on is really nice, and at least they'll be safe. And like, well, that doesn't work in drama. So now you're seeing it's all sort of about to fall down, because he's like, well, I don't want to be a superhero anymore. And
doesn't Eve hate living there?
While he was gone, she came around.
Oh, that's right. I'm reading in trades, and I think the end of the last trade is when he came back, so I haven't been there yet.
Yeah, so basically, but for her, a lot of time has passed, and so she's sort of acclimated, basically. It's just like, I really love this book, and I love that I'm still reading it. I'm not tired of it, and it's quite a feat. Even more so than that Astro City thing we were talking about, at least for a longer time, anyway. Look, I have another book to talk about right away that nobody else is going to talk about. That's a thing.
It's almost like someone who wrote the script wasn't thinking.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. Clean Room number 8. I just want to touch base on this. This is the Vertigo series by Gail Simone and John Hunt Davis. It's sort of a Scientology / demonic possession kind of story. And I like it. It doesn't feel like anything else. And I don't love it. I'm like, oh, great, it's an issue. But I keep reading it and sort of trying to figure out what it is and what it's about. It's really good looking. It's really well conceived. Like, I feel like it's working towards a thing. Like they've been giving us little hints about what this is. This woman who is the head of this sort of cult, and she's well known, but you know, nobody knows really know what she's all about. And she seems to be, she has some special power where she can see the evil demons or whatever, and she's keeping them at bay, but she seems like an asshole to the outside world. It's just a fun, like, sort of mid-tier Vertigo series, and sort of in that way, and I'm enjoying it. I'm still reading it, 8 issues in. And I think if you were thinking about trying it, I'm sure the trade's out by now. You should check it out.
Spidey number 6. A couple weeks ago, somebody tweeted at us, asked if we hated the character Spider-Man. Obviously, that's dumb.
God, no. God, no.
Spidey number 6 is my Spider-Man. And this is reaffirmed with Civil War. I really don't care about Peter Parker as adult Tony Stark light. I really, really love him as a high school student. And here, so we had a art transition. We had Nick Bradshaw for the first, I think, 4 issues. And then the last 2, we've had Andre Lima Araujo. And the transition style was jarring, because Araujo's style is very indie, where Bradshaw's very traditionally superhero. But this, I thought with this issue, I really got it. And I love the way he draws Peter being very tiny. I also love that they draw the full head mask with the web lines on it, whereas Bradshaw was making them stop at his forehead, which always bothered me. But here he fights the Vulture, and he's just this tiny little person next to the Vulture. And I like I like that. And Iron Man shows up, and they have a team up, and I like that he's just this little person next to him. And I like the contrast between kid Spider-Man and adult superheroes was always one of the more interesting things about him. And so when they're fighting over the Roosevelt Island tram between Manhattan and Roosevelt Island, and Spider-Man's just a little thing in the background. I just like that a lot, the way it looked. So if Araujo's staying in the book, I'm totally cool with that now. And it looks like they're kind of morphing this into a team-up book. I don't know if that's what's happening, because next month is Black Panther, and we had a team-up the previous month, but
well, but that's okay, because that's, I mean, there's the grand tradition of Marvel team-up, which was Spider-Man.
I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
I just like this version of Peter a lot. I like the way it looks.
So Robbie Thompson is writing it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He feels like a character, right?
I was just going to say, is this some weird and like a Charlie Kaufman thing? Is this
Flash Thompson's telling it? Yeah.
Well, yeah, Robbie Robertson and Flash Thompson. It's a merger of those two. Yeah, just like, yeah, Josh, you're with me, right? Robbie Thompson, that's a character.
I put it down and I thought, is that right?
that's a Spider-Man character if there ever was one, right? Yeah.
Seems like it's
cool. Yeah, no, I read this, and Araujo's Andre's art was, you know, a bit of a, you know,
it was a jarring stylistic change.
Whiplash after Nick Bradshaw, but after the second issue, I was digging it. So I think this series is great. Yeah. Real quickly, I want to touch on Future Quest number 1, which on paper sounds ridiculous. especially coming off of the recent DC reboot of Scooby-Doo. But here, this is DC Comics taking the characters of the Alex Toth design 1960s Hanna-Barbera universe, Johnny Quest, Birdman, Space Ghost, like that whole bunch of folks, and doing kind of a reboot of them. And
this is in your wheelhouse.
Well, I was going to say, it's funny, because I was thinking about it this morning for a couple hours, and I was...
Still works.
I was, I'm generally against licensed books because I want new things or whatever. But the thing is, that's with an asterisk, that is like, unless it's a licensed property that I love, which happens to be the case, particularly with Space Ghost. Additionally, you know, my love of Space Ghost, you know, came from Space Ghost Coast to Coast, which is as far away from the, you know, true to Alex Toth's vision of the character as you can get. But you can't deny that it's some of Alex Toth's best character design work. I mean, Space Ghost as a character is perfection, right? And so Jeff Parker is writing this, and then you go a little deeper, and you have an art team of Doc Shaner and Steve Rude, who, you know, Doc Shaner, we've been talking about for ages, saying, just give him Superman, for Christ's sake. Yes. He's one of the brightest future stars at DC right now.
Absolutely. He needs to stop it with his Instagram, which he just fills with Superman drawings. And I'm just like, you're killing my soul.
It's not fair. But then if you're going to go to the Alex Toth well, and you get, there's no one better than Steve Rude, who you might remember me from a couple weeks ago talking about his Nexus, very large, oversized editions that he's been doing of Nexus. Steve Rude is one of the classic artists from the 80s boom that was raised on Alex Toth. And so, like, and you see it in his art style. And then, of course, you know, colored by Jordy Blair. And so, like, you know, whether or not you like Johnny Quest and Birdman and all these other stuff, go look at this issue, because it's phenomenal. Like, the art is just amazing, and it's done straight. It's done straight laced. It's done action. It's very little. There's no comedy really. The much to be
which
spoken to.
Jeff Parker is perfect for.
Exactly. Yep. So
it really is an amazing. I don't so much care about any of these characters, and like, I'm like, all right, I remember that, but boy, it is an amazing alchemy. Yep. Of things, and God, I mean, Shaner's ready. I mean, like, he's still on these fringe.
I don't know what anyone else needs to do here. He's ready.
He's ready.
Bring him up. Put me in, Coach.
Look at the pages of Johnny and Haji, which I feel uncomfortable saying, but only
it was the 60s.
Well, I know that, but like, then Haji was appropriated by the military. But this was first, I guess. But it's not done that way. Anyway, the pages of them flying around in their jetpacks. I mean, it's all there.
Yeah.
Like the angles and the action and the, just when they cut to in the helicopter, which is a pointy helicopter, by the way. And Race Bannon is there, and he's got his eyebrow cocked just so. And come on, put him in, Coach. He's ready.
Yep.
This is ridiculous.
Yep.
What was that cartoon where it was like the Olympics with superheroes? The Hanna-Barbera characters.
Laugh Olympics or Wacky Races?
I love the Wacky Races. I think it was Laugh Olympics, because Wacky Races was not these characters. Wacky Races was the exactly. Oh, God damn it. It gets me every time. That dog. You see, you kids who listen to the show now, you don't know what it was like in 1983. We had shit that was like
you wanted to see that, but they showed it really early on Saturday morning.
Yeah,
and I
here's
I,
the thing, yeah, Wacky. So Wacky Races was done in 1968. Right. And it was the kind of thing that wasn't always on TV, but when it was, you had to stop everything.
Yes.
And watch it. You know, and it was
the crossover all star of the cartoons.
Oh, my God. But it was cute. But characters that you'd never it was, you know, that's the other thing is DC's bringing this back as well, too, with the in an awful like in more in the Scooby-Doo side than the Future Quest side. But you had the Slag Brothers, you had the Gruesome Twosome. Right. Mm-hmm. Professor Pat Pending. Penelope Pitstop. Oh man, it was great, and it was just them racing. It made no sense. It was just them in cars, and the cars did crazy shit. And oh God, it was great.
Can I mention one more thing about this issue, by the way?
I want to talk about Laugh Olympics.
I know, but there's a variant goddamn cover by Bill Sienkiewicz doing Space Coast and Brack and Zorak and come on, come on.
So Laugh Olympics,
that was my
Connor.
Yeah.
So Laugh Olympics. Laugh is spelled L-A-F-F.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. Yeah. And this was the competition between all of the. There was the Scooby-Doos.
Captain Caveman.
And Yogi Berra. Yeah. Yogi Berra.
Yogi Berra and Phil Rizzuto were in there.
Yeah, so you had the Yogi Yahooies, yeah. And you had the Scooby-Doobies, and you had the Really Rottens, who were all that's the villains. Really that great. Octopus, yeah. Right? And the Yogi Yahooies. Exit stage left. And you had the announcers. Oh God, it was great. It was basically Battle of the Network Stars, but with the cartoon characters,
yes.
The Hanna-Barbera characters.
Yes.
Yeah.
And let's not forget that Hanna-Barbera hired Jack Kirby.
How did this shit get greenlit?
They were drugs. All high. All of
yes. Oh God, this is going to be a super rat hole after we record this one. I miss Wacky Races. Was like you only got to see Wacky Races like. Once every couple of years.
It was hard to find. Yes.
It was hard to find, yeah. Yeah.
And by find, be at the TV when it was on is what
right.
I mean.
Right, yeah, exactly, yeah. I
wasn't
yeah.
looking for it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, all right.
Man. We did it.
Check out Future Quest. Check out Future Quest. It was good. Muttley.
I would be okay with DC's reboot of the Hanna-Barbera characters if they do a Laugh Olympics book.
Yeah, but super gritty?
No, it has to be written exactly like the old cartoon. As if Mel Blanc is doing the voices.
Now, here's the thing. Was Captain Caveman in both Wacky Races and Laugh Olympics? I think he was only in...
He was in Laugh Olympics, for sure.
He was in and Wacky Races as well, too. And he's the star.
Captain Caveman!
He was absolutely in Wacky Races, because I see him in that whole thing.
He's the nexus point.
Yeah, he is.
Captain Caveman is the piece that we needed all this time.
And he's very similar to Six-Pack from Hitman. Same shape. Same kind.
Wait, I'm sorry. It's spelled LAFF-A-LYMPICS. Laugh Olympics. And that was in 1978, 10 years after Wacky Races. So that explains how Captain Caveman could be in it. Although, yeah, no, Captain Caveman was on the Scooby-Doo's team, which makes no sense.
All right.
That Bill St.
Snagglepuss. Snagglepuss. That's who it was.
Oh. Let's do one email to finish those up. Adrian from Vancouver writes in and said, considering the imminent relaunch of DC's Rebirth, I've recently re-listened to the 4 episodes you did for the New 52 launch, and when you add in the perpetual Marvel relaunches and the steady stream of Image number ones, you guys have read a pretty ridiculous number of first issues in the last 5 years. True. So with that in mind, my question is this. Do you evaluate number one issues differently than you used to? Are you cynical about the teasing structure of many first issues seem to take? Are you sick of introductory internal monologue? Are there any other first issue tropes that particularly annoy you?
I feel like Adrian is projecting a lot of his
things. Yeah, and I feel like he's also never listened to the show because we love number one issues.
Yeah, they're always a very high percentage of the pick of the week.
There's nothing better than the promise of a number one issue.
The hope of the number one issue is the best thing. I love the number one issues.
I think I can answer this question.
Okay.
And I think that you guys can too, because I think that there has been some adjustment because we've read so many of them. One of the things that I look for in a first issue now is for it to give me more, and we've brought this up, to give me more than the cold open.
Yes.
Like, there has to be something that's interesting. Be that the hook, and then, but also something to care about, because the hook is not enough to care about usually. And I think that we've all seen where we read first issues, like we'll say Black Widow number one that came out. We're like, that was a cool sequence, and it was like the beginning of a Bond movie, but I don't know what the story is. Or
I would say that the first issue as cold open is a relatively new phenomenon.
Yeah,
that was something we didn't run into before. I can only think of a handful that have liked that, and they're really recent.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't look at a first issue any differently, because if it's, you know, cold open, it's pretty light.
Well, I mean, if you think overall, first issue used to mean, oh, I'm going to be reading this for a long time. And now a first issue is just, I'm going to be reading for this for 3 or 6 months.
I don't look at it that way at all. Yeah, I don't take that into account.
You mentioned internal monologue, and that was the part of the sort of the New 52 where I was like, okay, that's enough of that. It was a ton of it. So I definitely noticed that now. But maybe, you know, maybe not, guys. Maybe you don't do anything differently.
I don't. Ron?
I don't know. I mean, I agree with you, Connor, in that the cold open style of a first issue is a new trend, and I think probably related to the smaller page counts that we're seeing and that sort of thing. But and I if you remember, Black Widow number one didn't grab me. I was impressed by it. I thought it was great, but didn't grab me because it didn't have enough meat for me. You know, like I look at a number one issue like a pilot episode of a TV show.
Right.
You know, where, you know, sure.
Which are invariably not great issues or episodes normally.
Sometimes yes, sometimes they're great. I mean, like I always go back I mean, as much as I hate to say it, and Connor, was 7 years ago and make me want to shoot myself, but the first episode of Glee was like a oh my god, like this is amazing, you know, and it was great. And it's like that's the pinnacle of what you want to go for. And sometimes a TV show first episode can do that. Sometimes they need to figure it out and all that sort of stuff. But the thing is that
like the first season of Parks and Rec or the US Office where like they don't know what it is yet.
So I mean, it can go in either of those directions. But on the comic side, you know, I see the first issue as your opportunity to grab me, to keep me on or not. So you've got to give me something to hold on to. That's why I love reading them. And I'm not, you know, like I don't think of any first issue tropes or anything like that because it's a blank slate.
Do you have a higher standard now for continuing past a first issue as you ever did, given that there seems to be so much more content?
Oh yeah, I mean, you got. I mean, it's the audition. You know,
so are you harder on them now than you used to be?
Yeah, probably.
And then, you know, also having worked for a publisher for a while, I imagine you're looking at different things.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to look at the potential launch pad of stories and issues to come, and is it enough to grab me, and you know, and all that sort of stuff. Like, you know, like I mean, but the thing is that, like, you know, I apply every comic I read with the same test, which is at the end of the issue, does that leave me wanting to read the next issue, whether it's the first issue or not? That is just magnified on a first issue.
I think, and another thing that I think that we do a little different, we talked about this with The Fix, and we talked about it with Power Man and Iron Fist. It was like, that was cute, I could read this for 4 to 6 issues, but do I want to read it for a really long time?
That also has no bearing on the issue itself, though.
That's true.
Yeah, and that's something you do. I never think in terms of 4 to 6 issues. I mean, like, the thing, like, for me, it's more, do I want to keep reading this? And then there always comes the invariable moment when I miss an issue and I don't realize. Yeah, exactly. So that could be 4 issues, that could be 10 issues, that could be whatever, you know, like, you know, and that's the true test. Is it enough to keep me waiting and wanting? So.
I would object to the idea that we're harder, because I'm looking at the numbers right now. And this year we've done 20 picks so far, and 6 have been number one issues.
It was a lot of number ones.
Oddly enough, the last 3 in a row have been number 7.
Weird. I noticed that last week.
Weird.
When we talk about the picks of the week by the numbers at the end of the year, every year, we always have a section about number ones because we pick them so much. It's just the way it goes. We like a new concept. You know, and the new concept is freshest at that first issue, and it doesn't have a chance yet to get into repetitive territory yet, usually.
Yeah, it's the potential.
That is all of our email for the week.
Just wait, hang on. Are we okay. you teased earlier that we're gonna go back to Ditko.
Oh, it's in the other thing that
okay. Well, so I'm gonna return to Ditko now.
Okay.
And tell you that Ditko returned to DC in 1975, where he created Shade the Changing Man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then he also revived the Creeper, did some Demon backup stories, and he worked on the Legion of Superheroes. And then he returned to Marvel in 79, where he took over Machine Man from Jack Kirby. And then he continued until he retired from mainstream comics in 88. And he did runs on Marvel Comics Presents with Submariner. And the last major character he created was Speedball. So there you go.
Wow, interesting.
Ditko was working in the 80s. I can't believe we never realized that.
Did you see what the last cover that Darwin drew was?
The Future Quest, right?
The last cover that he drew was Mr. A number 18.
Really?
Yeah. And that blew me away. I read that in an article today, and that blew me away.
Yeah.
So he talked to Steve Ditko.
It's crazy.
Who doesn't? I wonder if he didn't talk to anybody up to that point, or that was just later.
No, he talks to people. He writes letters.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. He's not like a hermit. He just doesn't talk to the media.
Yeah. Or you, or us.
I never tried to talk to Steve Ditko, to be fair.
He doesn't suffer fools lightly.
Not fools like us.
Yeah.
Very black and white with him.
Yeah.
All right. So those comics we wanted to talk about and the emails we had time for. So if you want to get on the show, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can also send us in a voice clip if you want to have a little voice message on the show. And don't forget to tell us who you are, where you're from, and also, most importantly, how long you've been thinking about the question. Because that really tells us how much we should respect it.
We've got two questions to choose from, and one guy doesn't tell us, and the other guy's like, I thought about this for 3 weeks. Right. You know, we know who's going to get the nod.
Right. It's it's really, it's a matter of respect.
it's not our platform. Stupid. you could go back and listen to our Captain America Civil War podcast that we did. That's in the feed. All three of us joined for that one. And here's your spoiler warning. We liked that movie a lot.
Right. Sorry if you didn't.
Do people not like it?
We just talked about this last week, Josh, in the email section.
Yeah, I know. But, like, you know, really? Like, did, you know, some guy didn't like it.
Some random people don't like it. People cannot like things. It's okay.
That's true. It's absolutely true. I know. I don't like a lot of things.
You don't like a lot of things, yes. So we have two show. Okay, so this is where it gets complicated. As you're listening to this episode, which comes out on May 22nd, Preacher airs on AMC and in the United States, the first episode of the adaptation of the Garth Ennis, Steve Dillon series. We think we're going to do a show on that. We're not sure how that's going to work.
I misread that. Mr. Cook was still occasionally drawing covers and reading comics. The last was Mr. A by eight, number 18. So it was the last he read, not drew. Oh, that story was way more interesting before I read that. At least I fixed it on the show without sounding like an idiot, more so.
So like I said, we're not sure exactly how or when or if we're going to do a Preacher show. We've been talking about it. We probably will, but...
I'm down for it.
Just logistics. I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Right, yeah, figure it out.
But then later in the week on Friday, X-Men Apocalypse hits. So we're definitely going to do a show on that. So you can look forward to possibly two special edition shows this week on Preacher and X-Men Apocalypse. And then Josh, you have a show coming up.
It's true. I'm going to be doing a Talksplode, and that's as much as I'm telling you, with a couple of pretty well-known creators who are working together on a book.
Is one Steve Ditko?
One is not. Yeah, I did it, guys.
Wow.
I did it. Neil Gaiman stood outside his office with Jonathan Ross, and they couldn't do it, but I did it. It didn't. I sent a letter. That's how you do it.
You should have just given us a heads up.
I didn't want it. He told me I was. I didn't talk to Steve Ditko.
Oh, all right.
I wouldn't know what to talk to Steve Ditko about.
You should ask him about Speedball.
Or Ayn Rand.
So when you were creating Speedball.
Only Speedball questions.
Only Speedball questions.
It's like a rodeo. How long can you stay in the bull by asking only Speedball questions until he kicks you out of his office?
Now, you hate drugs, but this is the character you made. What's that about?
So that's coming up probably in the next couple weeks.
Yeah, we have to schedule out all that stuff. So... it'll happen, but there's going to be another Talksplode. I'm excited to do that. That's our interview podcast for those of you who haven't been around for a while.
And also, just as a note, next week DC Rebirth happens, so that's when the big extravaganza review session will happen.
Are we starting?
Yeah, starting next week. I think it's just the Rebirth book comes out next week, and all books.
Yeah, just the Rebirth book. Yeah, apparently spoilers or whatever have emerged, but I'm avoiding everything. I'm on blackout. I'll read it Wednesday, and like everybody else, and yeah.
So then June 1st, all those books happen. That's when we'll start doing the. If you were around for the New 52, we reviewed every single book they put out that month. Some of our finest work, I think. And in the meantime, if you're still hungry for podcasts. Goodfellas Minute is still out there in the universe. We just had someone tell us they just finished listening to the whole season and enjoyed most of it. So you can go over to goodfellasminute.com. You can find it there. It's on iTunes. It's available wherever. It's going to be out there. It's evergreen. If you enjoy Goodfellas, or if you never watched Goodfellas, you can watch it along with us 1 minute at a time. That might be weird and jarring and might take you out of the film a little bit, but we recommend.
I'm going to go ahead and say I don't recommend that.
recommend checking out Goodfellas Minute. We had a great time with a whole bunch of really fantastic guests, and it went by in a blur, but it was fun. And in the meantime, head over to iFanboy.com, comment on this show, talk about this week's books. You can find all of our other podcasts we mentioned earlier, like Captain America Civil War. You can follow us at Facebook.com/iFanboy and at iFanboy on Twitter. You can find out to pick the week before it comes out. Or before the show comes out. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at C.S. Kilpatrick, and at Ron XO.
And if you like our show, you could write a review for it in iTunes or just tell people about it somewhere. If you liked this show, you say, oh, hey, these guys are going to read all those DC Rebirth issues. So, you know, if you want to know what's happening with those, you should listen. Tell people about it, that kind of thing. We like that a lot. Spread the word, and we appreciate it.
Ratings.
That was horrible.
Ratings.
That was bad reading.
Yeah. So we talked a little bit about this last week. This was a hard week. We actually weren't quite sure if the show was going to happen or who was going to be on it. But as we said on last week's show, when our friend Darwin Cook was sick and then subsequently died probably 10 hours after we recorded, as he told everyone, just do your job. He would have wanted us to do the show, and he also would have called us idiots for even thinking of not doing it. We did it. And not to pat ourselves on the back, it was a hard week, and we didn't know quite sure what was going to happen. As we mentioned last week, our friend Darwin Cook died of cancer, and that was a really hard blow for us. And then, very surreally, about 24 hours later, our friend Timmy Wood died, who longtime listeners or iFanboy goers know was a writer on the website. He was often appeared on our shows. It was so close to Darwin that we literally didn't believe it for about 3 hours. And terrible. I mean, they're both terrible. Darwin, we at least knew was coming. We were able to somewhat emotionally prepare for it. Timmy was 32 and just died, and no one could prepare for that. And
the shocking nature of Timmy's passing is awful, and it's especially, you know, on top of the fact that of all the people that we've worked with, he was one of the most joyful, fun, you know. And what you guys don't know is that what you may not know. I mean, a lot of you did know whatever, but he was very active in the New York City comedy scene, and he worked at UCB, and they had a great tribute show, which I wish I could have attended this past Thursday at the UCB Theater in New York City. But I fully expected to see him on Saturday Night Live within the next 3 years.
A thousand people wanted tickets to his tribute show.
Yeah,
that tells you something. It was He came out to L.A., which is – no, not the last time I saw him. Ron and I – when I was in New York, Ron and I hung out with him.
When was that? I couldn't remember when that was.
September of last year.
Yeah. That's what it was. Yeah, that's what it was.
He came out to L.A. to do his two-man show at the UCB Theater here, and I went, and it was so funny because I'd never seen him perform before, like, in person. I'd seen his stuff online, and he was really great on stage. And just this boundless energy. And if you read, there was a ton of tribute things written about him from comedy people. And we know, just literally, I can't think of a nicer person that I've ever met.
That was the thing that, and you kept seeing that repeated by other people in the same way. I was like, oh, that was my experience too. That was like, he was like this joyful light of a kid. And I still think of him as a kid, even though I know he was 32. Yeah. But when we met him, he was a lot younger. And
early 20s when we met him.
He had just arrived, you know, in New York from what was a very
Houston. Yeah.
Yeah, was a very conservative upbringing. And so, like, he just came alive and, like, never slowed down. And, like, a lot of people, when this happens, people will be like, they'll say a lot of nice things. I literally have nothing bad to say about him. The best person.
Yeah, so. He was great. He was hysterical. He was nice. He was welcoming. I'm like, the thing is, I've been thinking about him and his involvement with us, and I don't know where he came from. I can't tell you when he emerged. I honestly don't even know why he wrote for us. I mean, it was like, the thing is, like, you guys were like, yeah, let's get this Timmy guy. And
I don't know if this is a harsh thing, but I'm going to tell you right. Like, I'm not sure that I even thought, like, he was great at the writing part. I just really liked him.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to say that he's bad. I just, like, I would have let him keep going because he was great.
Well, he found his niche. He wrote bizarre comedy pieces for us that only a handful of people got, but we were those among those people, so we loved it. He wrote those great email thread pieces that he would do every. You know, like the Justice League does Thanksgiving, the Justice League does Secret Santa email threads, and they were hysterical. And he started off, you know, as many of our writers did, in the community. He was on the forums, and he was. I don't know what it is about the last name Wood, but it invites you to say his full name all the time.
Well, and Timmy too. Like, he was never Tim. It was Timmy Wood. Like, he was like one of those full name people. And, like, and the thing is that, like, and, you know, and there have been some great tributes to him and things written about him. And I'm not one to you know wax poetic or share my, but I like in my the two things that I've thought of this week were just the last party we threw in New York City at Idle Hands, where he was everywhere.
Yeah.
Like he was, yeah. It was like it was like a ping pong ball. Like every time I turn around, he was talking to somebody else and making them laugh, and you know, and then also just why I couldn't remember when we hung out in September, Connor, was because we talked there because I was in Greenpoint, Brooklyn, playing pinball at a laundromat, because there's a laundromat in Brooklyn with pinball machines. And I'm playing this game, and I just turn my head to the right, and the pinball machine's against the wall. And literally at eye level is a photo booth strip of a bunch of people, and it was Timmy.
Hmm.
And I was like, oh, of course. I'm in Greenpoint. Of course, of course there's a photo strip of Timmy Wood right here staring at me as I play pinball. And I remember telling him that, and I was like, dude, I saw you. And he's like, oh, that's still there? Like, it was just like... You know, I don't know. It's just the dude loved life, and the dude was so funny and just so nice. And
well, you can hear it in our conversation here. You know, we're extremely, extremely sad about it. And I had a moment, you know, as grief comes and goes in waves, I had a moment a couple days ago where I just got angry about it. But to think about him is to remember laughing all the time, and that's going to be his greatest gift to the world. And I say that to the world because, like I said, 1,000 people showed up to his memorial, but also it made me very happy to see that he rated the New York Times obituary section. He was there and he got a photo, which is, you know, he wanted to be a famous comedian. He got a little bit of, you know, recognition at the end, which is sad. But, you know, he left a mark on the world, which is, you know, all you can really ask for.
Yeah.
He was a really, really great guy. And, you know, I don't know that we're prepared to talk about Darwin so much, but... you know, we talked about it a little bit last week. It's terrible. I spent a lot of time telling people because, you know, his death was covered everywhere. And people, like even my CEO of my company knew him but didn't know that I knew him and Mike knew him. And we ended up talking to a lot of people about it this week and why he was so special and important, not just as a person, as an artist in the world. And there's literally no one to fill that hole. In an artistic sense, he's completely original, one of a kind, and there's a really really bright light in comics that is now gone. That's not going to get replaced. There's no one. And Josh and I were talking off the show last week about how whenever we mention on the show, oh, this is the best person doing this, or there's no one better than this. The unspoken assumption is, well, other than Darwin is the best at all this stuff, and then after everyone else comes below him.
It's been that for years. More that we knew about comics and learned about them and had the facility to talk about them, the more that became clear.
Right.
And it's not like a thing, it had anything to do with us having met him or anything to do with, like, we're not saying this after the fact that we have believed this for years to be an absolute truth of the man's perfection at the art of comic book storytelling.
It was a great piece about him. I think it was IO9 where they said, you know, the great joy of being a comic fan is waiting for Darwin's next project. And that's the real, other than, you know, putting aside the personal stuff, that as a comic fan, that's the real kicker in the gut.
Yeah. Oh, it's right. Yeah.
You know. And then personally, you know, we were friends with him and it sucks. And we are, and then you can say it seems lame, right? It seems like not enough. And your heart continually breaks for his wife and his family and all the friends he had, you know, Jimmy and Amanda especially. So it's been a really tough week. And it really, God, I hate grief. And I had to go through this with my grandfather a couple years ago. Just, you know, you think you're okay one day and the next day it gets you again. And then you start all over again. And it's tough. And I don't want to make this about us because it's not. But it's about... a really truly original human being too, you know. I always felt like I was never a good enough man around him, you know. I felt like
I don't belong here.
I feel like I've come up short, but which was nice.
He didn't treat you like that.
No, but I always just felt it in her.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't treat anybody like that. It was like that. And that was another thing, like I kept reading other people's stories about his, like, amazing, like, generosity to people. and like people who not him whining and dining famous, people or other people in the industry, but like fans and like people who ran comic shops and just really like genuine and generous guy.
Yeah, he had just a random fan at his wedding.
Yeah.
Remember that, Ron? Like there was just that random dude and he was just a fan that he met at a show
Yep.
That wedding, I still talk about that wedding. That wedding weekend in Las Vegas was one of the most surreal and fun weekends I've had. And I was just showing somebody the other day the picture of Darwin twisting Mike Wormo's nipples on the party bus. he lived life to the fullest. And, 53 is way too soon to die, but he made the most of those 53 years. That's for sure. It's terrible.
Yeah, no. I mean, he's an inspiration, at the definition of the word. Mm-hmm. In terms of artistic talent and vision and ability, and greatness, to personality and the way he carried himself and the way he,
Yep.
And the thing is that like everyone, there's been. Countless number of stories and all this sort of stuff. And we have those stories and I have those stories. And those are mine. Yeah. Those are ours. And it just kills me that the story's over.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's terrible. It's really terrible.
But like you said, he'd be pissed off at me right now.
Yeah, he would. He'd be so mad at you right now.
And he would tell me to stop being a pussy.
Yeah.
And then he'd hug me and smile. And that's what he did.
And you go get a drink. And you'd laugh about it. Yeah.
And he made you feel as special as he was, and the thing is that like, I'm not special. I'm not great. I know that he was, and he didn't, he didn't care.
Yeah.
And he treated the people he cared about and he treated the people that were close to him right and true, and we didn't always get along. There were moments that weren't fun, or there are moments that whatever, but it didn't at the end of the day it didn't matter. And it's like you said, there are no words, and it just sucks, and it's an end of an era as far as I'm concerned. I don't know what outlet it was or whatever, and all the tributes with somebody, somebody summed up his artwork and his work as optimistic, and it was as many stories as you've heard of him getting into fights or, being difficult or whatever. He had such a love of life and such – it was a romantic spirit. I think that's why we all got along, because we are too.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're talking about comics, he got it. He got it. He got it better than fucking Axel Alonso does, or Dan DiDio, or any of these people who are doing things. He got it.
Yeah,
So
he understood. He understood not just how to make a comic, but what comics should be better than anybody. But to go back to his dual personality, he described himself as being, I think it was raw on one side and burnt on the other.
Burnt on the outside, raw on the inside.
No, it was like a flipped coin, burger patty. Like one side was raw, one side was burnt. And he had that hard, cynical outside, but he was as Ron just said, optimistic romantic on the other side.
And that showed through in his work, which is what we have.
There are two things to it. I think that you guys have touched on it really well, is that, there's his work and his public persona and his, the stuff that all of you listening can go enjoy. And then there's the personal. And, in the past, 10 years, we've been very lucky and very beneficial to have made numerous friends in the comic industry and make strong relationships with people who I care about and people who have made my life better. But nobody did that more than Darwin.
It's bad. It's a bad week.
It was horrible, and I don't know. I didn't know what to do with myself.
So that said, I'm going to pour another drink.
Well, that's what I'm literally going to leave here. Go meet our friend Mike Roma, who was also good friends of his and his wife's, and I'm going to meet our other friend Ben Simpson, who used to write for us, and we're going to go to a bar and we're going to drink and we're going to tell Darwin stories and Timmy Wood stories, and we're all sad, but we're going to try to celebrate as much as we can, because our lives are all, we said this last week, our lives are all better for having known both of them. We're better people. I'm a much better person for having known Darwin, and I'm a much happier person for having known Timmy. And it'll suck for a long time, and it'll suck forever, but we'll try to.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, Timmy made me laugh. Darwin made me smile. Marcia made me smile. Yep. Darwin's wife, who is an inspiration. And
for sure, yeah. I can't.
And I love them all. I love them. Yeah. I love them. Like I can't put into words. So, you know, I've had. I only own one piece of original art of Darwin's, which is a page from Parker at the end of The Man with the Getaway Face, and I bought it because he drew the TWA terminal at JFK, and I've had it here on my desk next to my monitor all week. And, I bought it and I told Darwin why. He told me I was an idiot.
Ron, you're an idiot.
Yeah. Holy Jesus. And it's a lot of money. I said, I know, but it's.
I really like that terminal.
Yeah. So
I'm a really big airline guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have.
Aerospecific.
I only have one piece of original art hanging in my apartment. It's a Darwin page from Jonah Hex. That I bought when we bought those pieces together and both went over to him. He, you know, signed it to us and
told us we were stupid.
Yeah, I look at it every day.
Yep. So, yeah. So thank you for making us laugh, for making us smile, for making us better.
And so that's it for this week's show. And thanks for listening. I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
Josh.